This is Medical Spa MD.
So, Dr. Young, you own Young Medical Spa, and you're over in Pennsylvania. Can you give me a little sense of how you have switched your practice over from internal medicine over to cosmetic medicine and how that kind of came about?
Oh, about 5 to 6 years ago, I decided that I needed a career change. As I looked at my options, as most of us did, I started to dabble in the cosmetic field, doing some mild fillers and laser treatments. And as the smart lipo phenomenon started to sweep across the country, it helped to propel me into full-time cosmetics. I was able to shut down my internal medicine practice completely about 2 years ago, and I've been full-time cosmetic since.
Now, you say that two things struck me about what you just said. One was that you were able to shut down your internal medicine practice. So does that mean that you were kind of no longer, you know, this wasn't just something that you approached as a sideline, but you saw this as a career change, and that kind of intimated to me that you were looking to get out of internal medicine.
Absolutely. There were several factors for that, which every physician can appreciate. One was the managed care intrusiveness into practice, where you have to get the prior authorizations for this and that. And then the other was just, you know, 25 years of doing internal medicine. I didn't see myself doing it for another 20 years. I loved it, but it was just not for me to do for another 20 years.
And so you started doing probably, you know, dabbling in cosmetic medicine fillers and probably Botox and some other kinds of things. You had enough success with that you started putting more of your internal resources towards that. What was the kind of precursor that made you decide, okay, I'm actually going to start buying technology and moving towards this full time?
The smart lipo phenomenon 3 years ago was our turning point. That procedure, we were early in on that, and that allowed me to make enough revenue to then continue to get new technology, new procedures, and we've just been rolling with that trend and new trends for the last 3 years. I think that with any new technology, when you're on the forefront, nobody really knows exactly, because they're so new, they've not been vetted out. So with any new technology, when you get in early, there's the risk, reward, and sometimes you get burned type phenomenons. So there's luck, and then there's doing your homework, and then there's always a little bit of both. And so I would attribute half to luck and half to looking for the new technologies that are coming out. And certainly smart lipo, as all of us know, swept across the cosmetic plane, probably second only to Botox.
Now, that smart lipo has got a number of competitors now. Have you seen a decrease in either the name recognition, or has there kind of been a watering down of the smart lipo name recently?
No, I think smart lipo continues to get recognition. For you and I, it's an old news, but for not everybody in the general public. And a lot of people equate Smart Lipo as a brand name that really means I'm going to get some kind of laser liposuction or some kind of liposuction done in a doctor's office while I'm awake. So when they come in for Smart Lipo, lots of doctors will use their Vaser, their Body Jet, their Slim Lipo. Even though people might have came in or linked up with Smart Lipo, a lot of times they don't know the difference in the technology and they trust you. They just know that it's the awake tumescent technique in the office, and they like that no anesthesia part. Early on, the lasers were very underpowered. There was only one laser from Smart Lipo. It was a 1064 wavelength, and nobody really knew how much it fat it melted. Nobody really knew exactly how to use it. Early on, doctors were just using it to tighten the skin, and they were still using their power lipos. So as time evolved, and we kind of, you know, because initially, you know, they said it's going to melt all the fat, and you can just melt it and walk away, which it took us all about, all of us doctors, about 15 minutes to figure out that that was all not true. So the lasers have evolved a lot in these 3 years. They've gotten higher powers. They use different wavelengths. So sometimes the laser is powerful enough to do all the fat melting. Other doctors still use it primarily superficially for skin tightening. As all lipo procedures are, every doctor is a little bit unique in his approach.
So have you kind of stuck with the tumescent liposuction techniques to build your practice? Have you added any other, you know, skin tightening? Are you using Thermage or any of those other kinds of treatments?
The new direction that our practice has taken, again, trying to stay ahead with the technology, is the fat transplantation market. We've been trying to now, we've been taking fat out for years. We're now trying to look into the market of putting the fat back in, also possibly adding the stem cells to the fat going back in.
First of all, how did you receive training for that? And then what kind of results? Are you still kind of in a trial or test phase, or are you actually performing those treatments?
We're performing the fat transfer. We're not using stem cells at the present time, but we're doing a fat transfer. We do breast enhancement, called natural breast augmentation. We do the buttocks augmentation. We do face fat injection for fullness and wrinkles, as well as hands. And you can do a lot of other parts of the body, especially, you know, some people use it to repair liposuction defects. Training, as with all these things, is that you don't learn it in your residency, so you have to seek out the appropriate mentors and the appropriate training courses, and then you have to come back home and slowly implement them into your practice, which is kind of standard for all of our cosmetic practices. That's kind of the standard now. Whenever there's anything new, that's how you have to slowly implement it, and being doctors, we're always trying to be safe as we slowly increase those things, not over-promising early on.
So typically, do you take patients that you have a good relationship with, and then when you're introducing a new technology, do you give them discounted treatments, or do you kind of have a cadre that you, in effect, your early treatments on?
We implement, you know, depending on the technology, the patient, the learning curve, how steep it is. Oftentimes, you'll do several patients at no charge. You know, when your patients trust you that you're not going to do them any harm, that's kind of the big thing when you're early on. If I could say to you, look you in the eye and say, we're not going to cause you any harm, we might not have the treatment perfectly trained or learned at this point, but we're not going to cause you any harm, we're probably going to do you some good. Lots of people are very satisfied with that.
How is your practice divided? I know that you are doing, you have a medical spa as well as, I think you characterize it on your website as a surgical center or something. How are you kind of divided operationally up around the treatment
By
and organization?
We would be divided clinic. Into the liposuction fat transfer area, which is the highest percentage. Number two would be the filler and Botox percentage. Number three would be the laser treatment percentage, which includes laser hair. And then we drop down a little bit into the skincare line, the facials, the peels, the Vela Shape, and the Zerona. That would be our lower percentage treatments.
Now, when you say percentage, are you referring to
percentage
the
of
amount
revenue.
Of physician involvement? Do you see that fat transfer techniques or potentially stem cell fat transfer techniques have the ability to move to the top of the revenue scale, or is that something that you see more as kind of an
right
add-on
now,
for some of the other treatments that you're doing?
I personally am still in the beginnings of my learning curve for some of the fat transfer, like the fat transfer to the face. I'm a little bit more in my beginning curve. For the breast and the buttocks, I'm actually have been doing that for some time. And the stem cell applications will be, besides the breast, a lot of that will be for the face. But fat transfer market, I think, is going to continue to grow because people come in for fillers. They get filler fatigue over time. Now I can offer them a semi-permanent filler that's their own fat. So the risk is low.
Is the selling point there that they're not actually having fillers, or is the permanency of having potentially their own cells transferred in the fat transfer, is that the thing that resonates with the potential client
of this?
Several
things, including what you just said. You know, it's your own filler. It's your own fat, number one. Number two, it lasts, you know, we say 5+ years because you continue to age. Number three, you can do much more because once you're harvesting fat, I can harvest 50 cc's, you know, whereas if I translate that into 6 or 7 syringes of a filler, you know, to do the whole face and all the lips and all the lines, the prices come out to be comparable for permanent versus temporary. And then there's also the rejuvenating effect that fat has on the overlying skin. So there's a lot of selling points. Everybody would do it, but it's a little more invasive and a little more downtime. So that's the reason that people don't do it. You know, it's a little new, it's a little more invasive, it's a little more downtime to getting the fat transfer.
So you're saying that the pricing of that is roughly the same over the period of 5 years as opposed to having filler injections?
It's less expensive. Less expensive.
By half, or what? You know, what is the price reduction that somebody's realizing that way?
Well, it's a little hard to compare because most of the time when you do fat transfer, you're doing multiple areas. So you almost come out ahead just on the first treatment. If you would compare just nasolabial folds, you're gonna, you know, after 3 or 4 treatments of getting your nasolabial folds done, that equals about the fat.
Brings up an interesting point. So how do you decide how much you're going to charge for different treatments? What is it that, is it your local market that you kind of look at? I mean, is it kind of, you know, crowdsourcing that here's what the average physician price is and therefore I'm going to price it comparably or 10% above or 10% below, 10% below? How is it that you arrive at the price that you're going to charge for these treatments?
You touched on a couple of good points that we would consider to come up with a price. I start by getting the average prices that physicians charge. There's big city prices. There's I'm the expert in the field prices that in my market I would never command. So I tend to be on the lower end of the scale. And then you're also calculating your time and the cost of that technology. One thing about fat transfer is that the cost of the technology is not that high. Most of it is just learning the skill. So then it's mostly your time. And then does anybody else offer that service? Usually early on you can charge a little more until there's lots of competition.
Sure, and that becomes commoditized. Do you see that is going to happen? If there's something that doesn't cost a lot of money to get into for a lot of physicians, and it really is their time, I would guess that fat transfer that makes fat transfer appealing in a number of ways. Do you see that that's going to kind of help push the fat transfer technologies kind of into the forefront around what physicians are actually talking to patients about in the consultation room?
I think that it will be not as widely utilized as some of the other technologies because I think the learning curve is a little bit higher. I'll give you an example. If I had to teach you how to put fat or Restylane into nasolabial folds, excuse me, that learning curve is not that long. But with fat, you're putting it all over the face. So, for example, how many physicians are doing the whole liquid facelift compared to who's just doing the nasal labial folds? You know, cuts down a lot of, you know, the percentage of doctors doing the liquid facelift and doing the whole face versus who's just doing nasal labial folds is a lot less, because the skill set and the invasiveness and the cost is a lot higher. So I see that it's going to be a popular treatment. I don't think it's going to be adopted as widely by a high number of physicians. I don't see dermatologists picking it up like every dermatologist picks up filler and Botox. I don't see them picking up fat transfer marker. Harvesting fat is not something that they do, you know, because you have the whole aspect of harvesting the fat.
Have you seen any complications with fat transfer?
Most of the complications of fat transfer tend to be that either A, the fat doesn't take and goes away, or B, on the other side, that they're a little bit too puffy or lumpy in an area. And most of that is technique dependent, but, you know, sometimes we all get results that are not quite as good as we would like.
Where would you put this on the scale of patient satisfaction, the fat transfer kind of techniques?
I'd put it about the 8 out of 10, because it takes a little while for them to, sometimes for the swelling to go down, for them to get used to things, and then they tend to be very happy.
Is there something that derives more patient satisfaction that you're doing? You know, is Smart Lipo, is that a 9 out of 10, or is there something that you're doing that drives even more patient satisfaction?
Patients are a tough audience. You know, getting 8 and 9s out of 10s is always a tough thing to do in my day. I would say we have a lot of our laser lipo patients, our Smart Lipo patients, that are very happy.
What skill set did you have to learn when you moved from internal medicine over to cosmetic medicine that surprised you?
I don't know if I have a good answer to that question. As far as dealing with my patients, I've always had the demeanor of trying to make my patients happy and doing what I need to make them happy. I guess I didn't really have to learn that, but that's something that we have to do every day, which is to do what we can within reason to make our patient happy, even if sometimes we don't necessarily agree that it needs a little more, or it can be a little better, or wasn't as good as they thought. You kind of have to work through that.
You probably now have a marketing budget. You're probably compensating your staff differently than you were before. Are there any of those things that either surprised you or, you know, that you had to think of these differently?
Surprising for me, you know, certainly the financial area is completely different. Your revenue is not as predictable. In medical practice, your revenue is very predictable. You know, you see X number of patients in a week or in a month, and the reimbursement is Y. You know, there's a little bit of cycles up and down. I am surprised at the trying to keep up with the technology, how fast the aesthetic companies, the cosmetic companies, will find new machines for me that I must have, and for me to figure out whether I must have them or not.
So when the reps are calling you up and saying, okay, we've gone from the G to the H or the Z model of this, and we'd like to upgrade you, and how do you balance that, or what is the process that you go through to decide if you're going to actually take them up on? And then how do you negotiate with them?
Very, very difficult on how to ferret out that information, you know, because I think that the companies are not always as honest as they could be or should be. There's not always good studies that are common sense, like the non-invasive fat reducing market now, which is where we know that the trend will head, but we all know that the results so far are minor and not as good as we would like versus the cost of the treatments. You know, so trying to get that information is difficult at times, and then you gotta, you know, go to the doctor, then the doctor that's usually talking to you is very close with that particular company early on. So it is very difficult. You often have to talk to the first doctor that took the leap that's not connected with the company and hear from him on how that machine really performs.
How have you tracked down those physicians, and what have they kind of, have they steered you clear from things that you were actually considering purchasing?
Oh, absolutely. Especially if it tends to be someone that you know personally that is also trying to stay in the forefront. That can be very, then they're going to be honest with you because they're going to be honest with you, and hopefully you're being honest back to them for something that you're doing that's different. So it can be very difficult to make those decisions, especially if you're trying to be an early adopter. If you're the person that's not an early adopter, it's easier. You can just sit back for that 6 to 12 months. You're not worried about the first wave of TV press and saying, oh, you know, there's Zeltique, that fat freezing machine that's in the press all over. You know, that somebody calls and says, you have it. You're not worried that because you'd rather be letting the market sort out whether this is, you know, because the market ends up sorting things out. You know, that's what's nice about America, the free market. They're going to sort out whether what the patient has to pay for the treatment, whether it's worth it.
What are you saying in the consultation room around those patients who are looking for something that you don't provide? Are you managing their expectations by saying, look, you know, I haven't yet made a decision? Have you seen that as a potential problem? Have you lost patients that way? Or is it generally a trust issue where a patient that comes to you, you can build up that level of trust that they will either wait to see what you decide or they'll go with a treatment that you offer?
In my particular market, I tend to be the leader of the technology. So I don't tend to lose in my market patients to somebody that has a new machine because I'm in a little bit of a smaller market as compared to a big city where somebody's going to buy that new technology no matter what it is. So I'm a little bit more fortunate that way. And most of the new technology, I'll at least know about it to give an intelligent answer about, does it work? How well do we think it's working? You know, especially with a non-invasive body contouring. People don't know that the results are modest with a Zerona, a Zeltique, a Vaser shape. You know, right now the results are modest. And I'll say, well, if you want an inch or two gone, those are okay. If you want it all gone, this is how we do it.
So have Zerona and VelaShape, those kinds of treatments, are they basically just paying for themselves, or are they not big producers just because the results aren't there?
You know, Zerona, some people do well with the Zerona, and depending on the market, my market, the cost for the 1 or 2 inches seems to keep some people away from that. But the Zerona is a good, you know, those non-invasive things, even though the results are not as good, they are a good opportunity for people that will not consider anything invasive. So that, you know, the person that would be sent won't let you ever inject anything into them, that can be a good option for them because that's what they want and they understand it. And we, you know, you always have to set the expectations correctly.
Are there treatments that you used to offer that you no longer offer?
You asked that. We were just talking about
liposuction
today. You know, that's certainly one that we had for a little while and abandoned as the laser body contouring market took over. And also the risk of that, the risk-benefit of that wasn't as good. And we just abandoned that technique.
So where do you see the next kind of wave of technology? I know that you're training for Palomar, correct me if I'm wrong, and then you're also kind of training physicians in how to do these treatments inside of your own practice. Where do you see do you have any insight into where the next treatments are going to go, either technology-wise or where the technology companies are looking to push this?
Well, I would give you several areas for people to keep their eye open for. Number one is the fat transfer market that we touched on, injecting the fat to the breast, the buttocks, the face, the hands, and other areas. Number two would be the non-invasive body contouring market. There's a number of ultrasound devices out there. There's the Zorona, the low-level laser. There's the Zeltiq, the cold therapy. I think we're at the beginning of that, and because that market has huge potential. So I think everybody who has a cosmetic or an aesthetic practice is watching that. We're all a little wary now because the results are so-so. So depending on your market, if you have enough patients to do those results, some people get those machines. If they're in a market where they got to wait for better results, a lot of people are still on the sidelines for that. The third market is stem cells. Stem cells are very cutting edge. Everybody has heard of stem cells and the controversy that surrounds them. They know they're controversial because they must do something good. So to the public, stem cells have a lot of buzz. I think there's going to be a lot of applications for them in the aesthetic arena that we just haven't touched on. Most of the research so far is just in that stem cells enhance fat survival after transfer. And that's been shown pretty well in the literature so far.
Do you see that stem cells will be basically an issue of training physicians, or do you think that there's going to be technology that takes over that? Is that going to be, is that going to be training dependent, or is that going to be technology?
Well, certainly it's always, I think it's both, because the application of the stem cells is going to be training. The harvesting of the stem cells is where the technology comes in. You can kind of break it down into two parts. How do I get the stem cells? That's where the technology component is, because you got to get it out of your fat. Number two, using stem cells is going to be then the learning part, the technique part. What are you going to do with the stem cells once you have them? Are you going to add them to fat to make the fat look better? Are you going to inject them into wrinkles? I think there's a lot of, and those are just the two I know about. I think there's going to be a lot more applications that if we can get the stem cells out, then doctors and patients are going to find out where to put them, and because they're fairly safe. So it will be easy to try them. For example, you can inject them in your scalp and see if hair grows.
If you were to tell a physician that they needed one, well, if they were going to buy one piece of technology, what technology would you be telling a physician who is just entering the market to buy?
You mean other than a computer?
Other than a computer.
That's a difficult question, because I think it would be market dependent, and skill set dependent. So I'd have to hedge on that answer, saying that the laser hair removal photofacial market, which is saturated, is still often your beginning step, because you kind of got sometimes you have to learn to walk before you can run. The other piece of equipment that I would say would be some sort of laser liposuction device would be the one that I would pick just for me, and knowing what has helped me, that would be the one I would pick if I had to pick one.
Okay, so an IPL and something with laser liposuction.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you're training physicians. Can you tell me a little bit about how your physician training works and what a physician who you're training could expect?
I'm training doctors how to use the laser in awake tumescent laser liposuction, the classic tumescent technique, utilizing laser as part of the fat melting process. What I've tried to do in my training sessions goes back to an earlier point that you mentioned, which is how do you get trained. So I don't focus in my training on all the book work and all kinds of slides and all that. I think you can, and I just give them a book that has all that in. I literally give them a book on liposuction that has much better stuff than I can teach them. What I teach them is hands-on, so that they can get some experience on a live patient where they're doing it, because that can be hard in some of these aggressive procedures. You can watch them. Doctors will let you watch, but how do you actually get hands-on while you're supervised by a doctor? So that's the emphasis at my course. I pick my patients that I give them a discounted fee. In return, they know that another doctor will be working with me, and ultimately they know I'm responsible for finishing the case, but that a doctor is going to be, you know, learning how to do, you know, injecting tumescent technique, injecting the laser, and I'm going to keep them safe while we all do that.
Is that, do you have a waiting list for those clients, or is that something that you have to kind of wait for potential patients that want to do that?
We usually get a waiting list.
Is that a multiple-day training, or?
Two days.
And they come visit you at your clinic?
Yes.
Much. Well, Tom, I want to thank you very, very much again for your time.
Thank you very much for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Would love to hear from you. So if you've got any questions or comments, send them along to the email address at podcast@medicalsparmd.com or leave a comment on the physicians forum on the medicalsparmd.com website. If you're a subscriber, that's great. If you haven't subscribed yet and you'd like this show to be downloaded automatically when a new episode comes along, then search for Medical Spa MD in iTunes, or visit the medicalsparmd.com website and click on podcast. Also, search for Medical Spa MD on Twitter, on Facebook, and in LinkedIn, because you'll find us there as well. As always, please consider everything we say to be complete conjecture and random speculation, not medical or legal advice. Laws and regulations vary everywhere, so consult a medical or legal professional in your country before taking any action. So that's it. So it's goodbye from Andy White.
And goodbye from Jeff Barsom.
Wishing you all the best, and we'll see you next time on Medical Spa MD.